So we are starting now with a small panelist discussion. So as I mentioned at the beginning of the session, but not everyone was there. So we had normally a talk by Mark Meyer, but unfortunately he's sick. He could not join. So we just hope that he recovers very soon. And then we have a small discussion with some panelists, not all of them. It's impossible to invite 15 persons here, especially that we have only one microphone. I didn't know that also in advance. So I will just introduce the topic, and then we can pass the mic, and people can express let's say their opinion. So one of the first thing that comes to my mind, and it's a bit follow up of what Dimitri has been presenting, is that when I see what's being done today in retro computing, there's a hardware part, software part. I would suggest that we start with the hardware, so it follows up a little bit. What I see very much is that either there are new systems or new boards being built to adapt existing like old mouses or old joystick to make them work with modern computer, or we see the opposite as well. We see like adapters from USB to have the PlayStation controller being able to work on a Commodore 64 or something else, Atari. These are the kind of things. Also, adapters for the video display, for example. So we see new boards being created. Sometimes it's these little ESP or whatever, or a Raspberry Pico or something like that. Maybe one reflection is that something that you see as well? Secondly, do you see something that is missing so far that could have been done but that has not been done yet, and that would be like a nice challenge? So I suggest that I just pass to you, and then we go to the full line.
Yeah, I mean, I want to add to that that it's not only about the I/O devices, but also about the computers. So building new extension hardware for old computers is also something that is very popular. I think there is this preservation aspect of it, and some people like the preservation more than they like extending existing systems with modern stuff and think of that as being not true to the history of things, and others do other stuff. So I like these like cross centuries systems, but others try to find all the original parts, and all of that is good, I think. I mean, it's part of a history preservation project, if you will.
I would say these two directions, two opposite directions you have mentioned, probably when you add a modern I/O devices or something similar to an old computer, it's, you know, a way to get work with it despite some absent parts. So it's a sort of digital prosthetics, maybe. And it's definitely important and very practical task because, well, sometimes some devices, I/O devices, were so indurable that impossible to find them, especially in operational state. The opposite task is mostly a preserving of a digital heritage. And while you can run software like operating systems or similar stuff in emulators, on modern computers, because you may have a problem to feed this IBM mainframe in your home, even if you find it. But the emulator can. But the user experience sometimes demands, or sometimes is different when you use modern pointing device. I'm speaking about mice, as you may guess. So you can preserve running software, but the user experience will be a little bit different because, you can simulate a display, but how to simulate input hardware? Okay, key presses, good. Keyboard on screen is definitely better than anything, but from the ergonomics point of view, it still leaves place for questions. So connecting old peripheral devices to modern computer and to simulators, I would say, plays this important role of preserving the user experience.
Yeah, you mentioned emulators. I think that it's also a very important area of retro computing, because there are many systems that are so rare nowadays that you can't have one. So in order to experience the system, emulation is your only way. And there are actually still a lot of systems that can be emulated today. I will be describing one of them today in my presentation. So I would say it's important, because otherwise it's just not possible to use this machine at all, and it gets to be forgotten.
Yeah, we are basically dealing with a very old machine from the 60s, and it's a mainframe. Some components are literally unusable because they're full of...
let's say shit.
Yeah, but literal mud. Literal mud, because they were stored for decades and in the wrong place, so it's impossible to recover them. In some cases, we also had the problem that we can restore most of it, but the mechanical parts are so delicate that we don't want to use that. So we just replace that with a microcontroller that does the same thing, but we try to keep it as visually close as the original. And you will see more about this in our talk. But sometimes it's also me and my old PSX controller I love, and I have had for 20 years, and I just want to use it on my Xbox Cloud gaming machine. And I just made a converter to USB that's this big, and I have open source, so it's maybe replies to the PSX one. It's actually very easy to make an embedded device that converts an old bus to a USB modern device, so you can even restore, I don't know, your old steering wheel, like I did, to reproduce the same experience you had as a teenager or something, you know. And you want to add something?
Well, yeah, for me, like, it's extremely important, the discussions about emulators, because for me, emulators are not a way to reproduce the original experience of using certain machines, mostly because you don't want the original experience of running machines. You don't want two rooms full of iron just to have half a megahertz of computing power. For me, what's most important is that emulators are running documentation, which means that you know that documentation you have is correct, and you can probe it, you can compare it to the original hardware if you're so lucky to have it. So yeah, it's that's a very important thing. So and even like for younger people, like in the retro gaming scene, that they have this kind of factions between, you know, or real emulator or real FGAs. Should I use the MISA or should I use the MAME? Doesn't matter. That's not the thing. Like, the thing is that we have that. We have the machine description. We can recreate it. So we have the FPGA. We have the emulator. We can, and also, like, something very important is, like, don't be ashamed or don't be scared to mix and match technologies, centuries, and whatever. My personal, let's say, religion fixed point is that your modifications should, in my opinion, should be reversible. Some people don't agree to that, but yeah, like, interface the old machines to the new one. The gods of retro computing will not be against you for that. Actually, quite the opposite. You will breathe new life into new machines, and that's very important.
Thank you. So the problem with being last is everything's been said. So I'm going to have to rely on force of personality and jokes. Well, that's certainly not going to work. So my thing with the I.O. thing is not limiting it to pieces of what I would call simple hardware. Mice are comparatively simple hardware. Potentiometers, yeah, I understand them. Their specs are out there. But there's also I.O. that talks to things like processors. Back in the good old days when I was actually young, don't laugh at that one. I'll tell you when I'm doing the funnies. Back when I was young, BBC Micro had a tube port that would allow you to put other processors to connect to your BBC. That's fine, you can emulate that stuff and that works. But then fast forward another 20 years and you can't do it anymore, because you can't do any I.O. to the processor because someone's put some gunk in there that says, oh, unless you're running it on the hardware, you can't work out what's going on. Northbridge, Southbridge, Xbox chips, they have special things in. We're not going to be able to ever emulate them until we crack what's going on under the hood. So the I.O. from the olden days, versus what we're going to have as a problem coming up in 20 years are different problems. And it's solvable to say, yeah, I can see a transistor, I know how that works. But you get a chip from 20 years ago, you can't, most people can't just take the top off, scan the silicon inside, and work out how to emulate that or provide any sort of modern version of it.
Thank you. I don't know, François, you wanted to add something? No.
That's one.
Okay. Like Steven has said, most probably everything has been said already, being last. So that's why I will switch to software. And I think, Michel, you're the first who emulated actually the, who mentioned the emulation part. I think when we look about software, again, I also mentioned at the beginning of the session that there is mostly new games that are still being released, operating system. All this most probably would not happen if we would not have like modern emulation today, because people are not working anymore, or not that much. I don't think that many people are still working really on the real old hardware. They are working on emulated systems. So there may be same kind of reflection. We can go quickly. We still have like 7 minutes around the room. You want to start? Or? Ah, yes, okay. Yeah, just about emulation, are things still missing or a bit of your perception on this topic?
So the problem with going first is you've got to find something really quick to say when everyone's looking at you. I've written a few emulators, and they're really quite good fun to do up to a point. The problem is, after you get to the point where the first thing works, i.e. the basic prompt comes up from the ROM, it's like, how do I prove it works? How do I know that this ROM is emulated correctly for everything that will ever run on it? And it's one of those problems of, it's very easy to get bored with it. It's very easy to get frustrated with it. And unless you're doing a full, spoiler, simulation rather than emulation of a platform with all the timing idiosyncrasies that the original had that your software emulator might not have, how are we ever going to know that we have actually preserved the thing we were trying to preserve in our software emulator / simulator?
Yeah, like I have only a small thing to add to this is that you can also not care, in the sense that having an emulator that only emulates 5 instructions out of 10, it's good than having no emulators. And having an emulator that like implements 35 instructions, but in 3 instructions, like the fifth side of the fifth clock cycle is like slightly wrong. Yeah, we can find it later. Like as soon as like we have something to a start to can jump off of, everything should be fine. And so it's a complicated task. It's a very involved task. It's very like time-consuming and brain power-consuming. But also, like nobody's forcing you to go to completion. This is a hobby, first and foremost, at least for now. So enjoy it, because like it's great to be part of history and to be in connection with history. Also because it can learn you a lot more of what's going on right now.
So yeah, it's great that you raised the question about the difference between simulators and emulators. It's also perfectly okay to write the simulator if your purpose is not reproducing what the machine was doing, but for instance, verify that the software you have dumped from very old media is doing what it's supposed to do. So, and you know, you can double check that, but of course an emulator gets closer to what the machine was doing, and that's the right approach, for instance, to verify that the machine that you're restoring is doing what it's doing. And the gap in between there is documentation, is how much documentation you can find. We were so lucky to have a machine from the 60s, as you will see, but with a lot of documentation with it. So we could start attacking the problem from both sides. And one thing is restoring the hardware, as you said at the beginning, and the other thing is restoring the software. And those things go in parallel. And of course, the software, until the machine is done, is probably taking us a few years. So in the meanwhile, we want to be able to verify the software that we dumped. It's corresponding to what it was supposed to do.
I think it's also worth mentioning hardware emulation. So today you have several FPGA platforms that you can reprogram to recreate a machine very close to the original hardware. So this is maybe closer to what you said, trying to get the original hardware experience and not just a window and a computer. And I think that's also an interesting area here.
Well, if speaking about emulators and simulators, I would mention that starting from some years, we have got official SDKs with emulator included for some old platform or something like this. And it's not obviously true for 60s, but somewhere in 80s, when the software development kit with emulators do appear, it became a little bit easier to preserve. You just use nested virtualization to run, this simulator in some virtual machine, which itself may sit inside of some virtual machine. And fortunately, the difference in, resources, computational resources, helps to drive this without much pain. Obviously, that's not true for, pre-80s systems, maybe pre-70s for sure. So I would say that the biggest challenge here is, to run something which was invented before virtualization exists in heads of some engineers. Later is just, an easy task sometimes.
Yeah, to me it is quite fascinating that for a single person it is now possible to, with the modern tooling, to recreate software simulators or emulators of systems that have been created by dozens or hundreds of engineers. And that really is also speaking to the progress that we've made. So there, of course, fundamentally there is not a big difference between these old systems and what we have today. There is quite some architectural similarities in how they work, but from the perspective of how much of that we can now move with the tooling that we have, that's really fascinating to me. So like my recreation of a system that had dozens and hundreds of people working on that, I mean, it's not complete, but still, it's just the tools that made me do it, and not something else.
Hey, thanks. That would be then the final words, because we are then reaching the time. So many thanks. I have Hans, Dimitri, Michal, Daniele, Antonio, and Steven. Steven, you're staying?
Well, I have to. I'm talking.
Yeah, but I mean, it's your slot now. So many thanks again to all.